interview with
Dr. Ramesh Chandra Lalji Mehta.
It's the 27th of November 2003. Okay, Dr. Mehta, as I mentioned earlier, would you please begin this interview by telling us a little bit about your family's history, where your parents and your grandparents are from?
My father was born in India, in a town called Pipatora near Jamnagar, and he then came to East Africa, Zanzibar in particular, as a young child. My mother was born in Zanzibar, and they got married in Zanzibar. I was born myself in Zanzibar, and at age about 9, we went to Kenya, and I was brought up in Nairobi, where I had my primary and secondary education. In about 1965, after finishing my O-levels, I went to India, where I studied my A-levels as well as did my degree in medicine. After serving in India a one-year internship and a six-month post in surgery, I then migrated to UK, by which time my parents had already come from in Kenya to UK, and they were staying in Leicester. That is how I also happened to come to Leicester in 1974, and have been since that time in Leicester.
Can I ask you, what was your father's profession when you were living in Africa?
My father was working in a theater in the initial part, and then having moved to Nairobi, went into business, and he changed many different form of businesses, and finally we had a shop where we were selling furniture, etc.
And what was life like? Because this was in Kenya at the time, but what was life like in East Africa at that time?
The life initially in Zanzibar, when up to an age of 9, I have only very few memories, but a happy memory in Zanzibar. Then when we moved to Nairobi, where I had my primary education, where I had many friends, like a teenager, we used to play various games on the street, in playgrounds, etc. And I had a happy upbringing, with some flavor of religion being imparted by my mother. And it is from a very young age that I used to attend the temple or Dharasar in Nairobi. But my basic knowledge of religion was very simple, and I knew my prayer of the Naukar mantra, but that was about all that religiously I was involved in with the community. At about age 16 is when I went to India.
Yeah, what was it like going to India then? I mean, was it vastly
it was
different?
It was difficult in the sense that it was the first time that I was going away from home, going into though motherland, but to me it was a foreign country at that stage. But I had relations in Bombay who supported me through the difficult times.
Is that where you did your studies in Bombay?
I did my studies in Bombay, is where I first initially did my A levels. I used to live in a hostel where, you know, it was a catering kind of hostel, so there was no problem about food, etc. And India being what it is, you could get different cuisines, etc., for eating anyway. And after finishing 2 years of my A levels is when I joined medicine. And those were lovely times in the sense that my aspirations were being fulfilled, and that both my family and myself, I wanted to become a doctor right from a young age. And so my 5 years in medicine were passed very quickly. And it was during my medical career that I met my wife, and we had two or three years of courting as well. During
this in Bombay also?
In Bombay. Right. She was also doing medicine. The turning point in my life after I came here was when really religion was imbibed more in me. And to some extent, my parents having also come to Leicester, and also the influence of both my parents and my wife, I think are crucial to the change in me towards religion. My wife is from actually a Hindu background. She is a Maharashtrian, having born in India, was not versed with the Gujarati language either at that stage, but now speaks fluently Gujarati and is probably a better Jain than myself. After coming to UK in 1974,
did you go back to Africa before you came to the UK, or did you go straight from India?
After my qualification, I came straight here.
Okay.
But during my education, I did return back to Kenya once. But after qualifying, I came straight here. It was in 1977, just some 2-3 years after I came here, that I got involved with the Jain community, and I came up into their executive committee. At that time, Jains used to hire out the Sanatan Mandir, Wesley Hall, and various church halls.
They didn't have a specific place to worship.
That's
then.
Right. And we used to hire those halls whenever we had our festivals, like Lord Mahavir's birthday was being celebrated, or we have 8 days of our Parishan festival in August and September. So this was the time that, because we did not have a building, we used to use other halls,
right.
Be it a church hall, be it a Sanatan Mandir, etc. It was around 1979 that we thought that we must have a building of our own. During this time, prior to us purchasing this building, we were running a Sunday school again in community halls and housing association offices and things like that.
How large was the community?
There were about, at that time, about 500 to 700 Jains in Leicester, which has now grown to about 1,000 Jains, I believe. And it was in 1979 that we thought that we must buy a building of our own. And this church, which was a disused church, was in a pretty bad state, came up for sale, and we put a bid in, and we were successful in getting the building around just in sort of summer of 1979. And we had our first Parishan festival of 8 days in this building, where our youths and our girls all used to come every evening here, and we painted this building and got it shaped so that we could then celebrate our first festivals here. And that was an extremely good spirit within the community.
It brought the whole community together.
And people from work would come straight here. And we had, you know, rollers, paint, this, that, and other, and everyone used to work and we were providing food so that, you know, obviously people coming from work would be hungry as well. And in that particular way, we started. At that stage, we never thought that we would have such a beautiful temple that you have witnessed here today. As time progressed, we obviously started our Sunday school here. And we started using this hall for various activities. And it was in about 1982-83 that we thought that we should now have a temple. In the room that we are sitting here was our first small idol that we installed there, and we started. This room was the room that we used our first small temple. But those images were not of consecrated images, and they were not Buddhistic murtis.
Mm-hmm.
It was around this time that Dr. Natubhai Shah, who was the mastermind behind the temple and the president at that time, foresaw that a beautiful temple could be built here. And we got funds from rich Jains in Belgium, Antwerp, who donated large sums of money to our organization. And this was the start of our dream of creating a beautiful Jain temple in Leicester. And since then, money started pouring from Jains all over UK, from East Africa, and we were then able to get the first idols, the consecrated idols, were brought here in 1985, and the temple was completed in 1988. In fact, in this July, we'll be completing our 15 years since the Pratishtha ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
During this time, we have progressed in the sense that there are more people now involved in religious activity than ever before,
mm-hmm.
Both from young people to old. Initially, we were doing things ourselves. We now have learned Jains from India who visit the temple, and lecture series are being organized. We have a learned Jain permanently based in Leicester, in our temple, so that they can impart knowledge. Besides our Sunday school, we now have classes for adults where the Jain scriptures are in Ardhamagdhi and Prakrit, and they're very difficult to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And this learned chap, Mr. Jayesh Shah, who has been brought from Ahmedabad, teaches to those who want to learn the scriptures. So we have a class where the scriptures are being learned.
Mm-hmm. Is that every week or every day?
This is on every Sunday morning.
Sunday.
And on Monday night, we have theory classes for adults.
Mm-hmm.
On a Wednesday evening, we have theory classes for youngsters. And then we have our Sunday school.
Mm-hmm.
It is our children who lead most of our festivals. So we see that the festivals are, where if there are dances, any dramas, anything that is to do with religion, we will get our children participate. That actually works twofold, in the sense that the parents have to bring the children to the center,
mm-hmm.
and they also get imparted with knowledge when they come, and the children also get that love for the center, love for the religion.
And do you, because they're probably at quite a young age when they start to get involved, the children, do you feel that as they grow old, do they keep that? Or do they, you know, when they could become teenagers, there's always that, you know, rebellion or something. Do you think they still keep it on?
Yeah, it is my firm belief that anything that you impart to the young children, even when they go to university, they may diverge a little bit away from religion,
mm-hmm.
or not even away from religion, but get more engrossed in other social activities, etc.
Mm-hmm.
But it's my firm belief that once they have the family of their own, and when they have the children of their own, they want the same qualities imbibed in their children.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, they have wondered a little when they go to university, but they do come back.
Mm-hmm.
And this is evident because we have had first generation children who are born here and who have now been in university. My own son, who is now 24, was born in Leicester. He is now a medical practitioner. He has participated in many activities here. In fact, he was the first born when we bought the temple,
mm-hmm.
This particular church. he has participated in various cultural events within the organization, and many television programs. BBC did a Believe It or Not program here where he was involved in that. Then there was Never on Sunday, again, a religious series. And there are various other times when broadcasting people and radio stations, both locally, have involved our children. Our children also, at the moment now, we have a young girl who is like a DJ, looking after one of the radio stations on a voluntary basis.
Yeah.
You know, the religious programs that are being broadcast at. What else?
Do you think that it's important for the younger generation to learn their languages, like, you know, either Gujarati or, you know, their family's language? Do you think it's important?
I think it is absolutely crucial that everyone should learn their mother language. If someone who can learn mother language very well and then wants to learn other 17 languages, I have no problem with that. But if you have the intelligence of learning other languages, then I think that person is intelligent enough to learn their own language. And until the own language is learned, it is very difficult to understand the scriptures, the books written in the vernacular. Translation will never be absolute. And therefore, the meanings are turned into... the exact meaning is not being conveyed once translation occurs. And most translations don't use wordsmiths that it is an exact translation. Yeah? So if someone writes in Gujarati and asks me to translate, I translate, my translation is not going to be that brilliant because I'm not a wordsmith. And therefore, you know, the essence get lost when you use translated things. And therefore, I mean, I absolutely believe that mother tongue is the first thing that we need to be see that our children have that. And efforts are being done by most organizations, say in Leicester, and there are various Sunday schools, other schools, Gujarati classes, etc. We have two young girls who have, I think at age 10 or 12, have done their O-levels in Gujarati. But that speaks for itself.
Yeah, absolutely. You spoke a lot about your involvement with the centre here. But what actually makes you personally a Jain? What are your own personal beliefs and your way of living your own personal life?
As I said, that in 1977, my knowledge of Jainism was meager. And now, on a personal level, I come every day to the temple. Even prior to this interview, I was here at about 11, and I did my puja, touching and anointing the idols with saffron paste, etc. I did my meditation. So this is my daily routine.
What do you get out of that daily routine, though?
I think it is like, after a day's work, you feel tired and exhausted. This is like charging your battery.
Right.
And the peace and tranquility that is there in this temple. I could be alone in my room at home, and you still don't get that tranquility, because our mind wanders a lot. And within seconds, we could be from here to Australia and back, and India and back, in our thoughts. When you come here, you are focused on the idol. Now, the principle of Jainism is very clear. It's a non-violent way of life. Therefore, we are basically vegetarians. Now, what that makes me to come to the temple is that my Lord really cannot give me anything. Yeah, I am what I am because of my karmas.
Mm-hmm.
If I do good karmas now, my next life would be a better one. It is of my previous karma that what I am today. And so why do I come here? I come here, and when I look at my Lord says, you follow the path and you can become exactly like me.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing less, nothing more. And therefore coming here, you meditate, you go back from here into your real world. And if I can practice my non-violent way of life, to see that I don't hurt even the tiniest creature,
mm-hmm.
Knowingly. If I see that when in my day-to-day work, when I'm consulting patients, that I bring that little bit extra to see that their pain is lessened.
Mm-hmm.
I may go out and out of my way to maybe help more than beyond my call of duty.
Right.
And those are the sort of things that make me, I think, a better person.
Mm-hmm.
Every human being becomes angry. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not spared either. But when I come to the temple, I find that my day becomes a little better one. I'm less angry. Even if anger is about to happen, you can be watchful and see that you know, you don't throw your anger on someone else.
Right.
And so I feel that, you know, I mean, that is another helping factor. It also helped me to do more charity work. For example, when the earthquake of India occurred in Kutch, with another friend of mine, we raised something like £60,000 to help people who had their legs and arms amputated when, you know, boulders and stone,
mm-hmm.
fell on their legs. And having collected the money, we actually went to Kutch, and we stayed there in 40 degrees heat. I went myself and a friend of mine, and we had camps at different parts of Kutch. And we went from one town to another where we, you know, camps were set. We had a team from Jaipur who were specialized in making legs, artificial legs,
mm-hmm.
and arms. So those guys were brought to Kutch. And the pleasure that I got out when I saw a small child or a human being sort of hopping into the tent,
mm-hmm.
and in the same evening, the leg was prepared, made, and he walks out of the camp walking, is something that I can't put a price on.
Yeah.
The amount of happiness, you know, that brought to me. And I felt that this was only possible because of the compassion that my religion has taught me,
mm-hmm.
the karuna that made me go there. Prior to that, raise the funds for that.
Mm-hmm.
So these are some of the things that
aspects.
Aspect that, you know, you put it in practice.
Yeah. I mean, obviously you do the good work to get the good karma, so you better yourself for your next life. But what's the ultimate goal then for Jains?
Well, I think for every Jain, the ultimate goal is that we live. Our birth could be in animal kingdom,
mm-hmm.
could be in hell, could be in heaven, or it could be in human form.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is only in the human form that we believe that we can salvage ourselves.
Correct.
And achieve a state where of siddha, that you are not to be reborn.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore my ultimate aim is that it is God, let this be my last birth. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I may not be reborn again.
Mm-hmm.
But this is only going to be dictated by what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And the bad karmas has to come in fruition. So any bad karmas that I do now will come into fruition. So a birth is, is definite. Yeah, and the good karmas that I do now would see that my next birth becomes a better one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a better than what I am now. So I'm watchful of what I do most of the time.
Do you identify with yourself? Like, how do you actually identify yourself then? Do you call yourself like a... You're obviously, you're a Jain, that's your religion. But your ancestors are from India. You were born in Africa. You've lived in the UK for so long and your family grew up in the UK. So what do you actually... What is your identity now? What would you call yourself?
Well, from the religious point of view, yes, I'm a Jain.
Mm-hmm.
And if anyone asks me what your religion is, then yes, I am a Jain.
Mm-hmm.
But I am a Zanzibari, East African, Indian, UK Jain, having traveled so many different places.
Yeah.
But to me, my turning point occurred after I came here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. My time in India was a university time.
Right.
Yeah, and therefore, you know, you are having many other activities in life, sports, this, that, and other. And truly, though I was in India, I wasn't exposed too much to religion.
Mm-hmm.
because, you know, you're living in a hostel and
studying,
you had and studying and that's it. So it's my turning point, and I was fortunate
mm-hmm.
That because I got involved with community work, I joined the committee as an ordinary executive committee member.
Mm-hmm.
And after 2 years, I became the deputy secretary. And then I went up to become the secretary. And then I became the vice president. And I had 2 terms of presidentship.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm at the moment both in the committee as an ordinary member, but also I'm one of the four trustees of the center. So I have gone through almost every post in the committee. And therefore, as I got involved, more and more involved with the community work, so by serving my community, I think I have benefited more
mm-hmm.
than the community has benefited. The community feels that they have benefited more,
mm-hmm.
But I think the immense change in my own personal life is just tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
And this I can't say for every Jain in Leicester, yeah? Because all of them have not been that close to the in community work, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the difference. That I feel thankful to Lord for putting me into the committee and rising and never looking back.
Uh-huh.
So that is where that's helped me
yeah.
personally. Though it has helped the community as well.
Mm-hmm. And where do you see as home now? Where
my home
yeah.
is still India.
Still India?
Still India.
So even though it's going back generations.
That's right. And especially so because our monks and nuns cannot come overseas.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, Jain monks, once they become monk or nun, yeah, they have to give up everything
mm-hmm.
which they possess. They leave their homes, their family, their wealth, and they're out walking from one village to another, barefooted. They would be their next meal would be supplied by the lay Jains when they go to the next village.
Yeah,
yeah? The accommodation would be provided by the lay Jains. They don't use any vehicles, so they can't use a motorbike, a motorcycle, aeroplane, etc. So I'm never ever going to have Jain monks and nuns come here.
Mm-hmm.
And those are our gurus. Yeah? Those are our teachers.
Yeah.
And without that religious fervor from the gurus, yeah, the spiritual progress is never complete.
Right.
Okay. And therefore, at the moment, what happens? You know, we go to India for 4 weeks holiday. We might see the guru twice on a couple of occasions, and that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if really I want to spiritually improve myself, then really I need to go to India, stay maybe a few months at a time. And therefore, the roots are still there.
So that's always the center point.
Exactly. And without our gurus and our teachers, the spiritual completeness cannot take place. And therefore what we get exposed here are only learned people. Okay? They are only learned people, but they are exactly like me as far as their status within the fourfold religion is concerned.
Right.
Yeah? They are not gurus. They are only learned. They're learned more, but their learning is from books.
Yeah.
Okay? But you need to have that within you. So therefore, a person who tells me, oh, you shouldn't do violence, yeah? And I see him doing also violence, it cannot impress me.
No.
Yeah? But when my guru is totally non-violent, yeah?
And practicing perfectly.
Practicing perfectly. And therefore, he has got all the right to tell me. Yeah? And he's setting an example before preaching to me.
Yes.
Yeah? While most people here who come are just preachers. Yeah? But are they doing that in their own lifetime?
Yeah.
You'll find very few. One of our acharyas, Acharya Tulsi, of the Therapanthi sect, what he has now been doing is, he sends here people who are called Shraman and Shramni. Now these are male and female who are going to eventually take their vow of monkhood and nunhood. But prior to the taking their vows, they send those people here. Okay?
So they can travel before they take the vows. Okay.
Yeah. But they already started practicing all which they are going to follow when they go back.
Yes.
And therefore, I have some respect for these people.
Because they know that they are...
So our gurus are thinking that how many guys can come to India and stay here 4 months with me? No. How many? Very few.
Yes.
And therefore what he's saying, okay, I will send people here who are also of the same quality. But because they haven't yet taken the vow of monkhood and nun, it is still not the same. It is much, much better, but not the same. And therefore... So that thing is happening now. That prior to their taking their vows, they come here, stay here 3-4 months, impart as much knowledge as they can. Once they go back and they take their vows, then they can't come.
Yes.
Yeah. Then they send another team.
Okay.
And it's an ever-going process which has restarted recently.
Okay. So did they come like every year or every few months? Or how does it work?
It's which Jain organization invites, yeah?
Okay.
I mean, at the moment, we have one Shraman and Shramni, I think, in London.
Okay.
Because they've got a building there, you know, they're still, their needs are very meager. Yeah? All they want is food. That's it. I mean, they've got 2 pairs of cloth, a stick, some utensil in which they want to bake their food. And that's it. They don't want anything... expensive for themselves. They impart knowledge. They stay 3-4 months. During those 3-4 months, different Jain organization bring them out.
Okay, like they go around the country.
Yeah. So what we'll do is, I mean, because they can use vehicles. Yeah. So like say they've come to London. If we decide that okay, in the Christmas 3-4 days, we want to bring them here and we'll have a seminar. And our children can get some knowledge from them, and we adults can also gain. We'll call them here. That organization will release them. There's no cost to us. Someone will have to just go and bring them here. We'll give them accommodation somewhere. They stay there, impart knowledge, then they go back. Then if Manchester has got a joint organization, they want, and they'll say, okay, once they've already come halfway to Leicester, why can't we pick them up from here to Manchester?
Yeah.
We say, fine. We have an ashram in Birmingham, so we'll say, okay, they're here.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to have access to these learned people? So that's how we will propagate.
Does anybody from the UK ever go to India to become trained as monks and nuns? Or is it generally people in, you know, people born in India who take those vows?
No, I mean anyone. I mean, for example, if any Jain here or in East Africa, I know of some Jains in East Africa who, when they decided that not enough is enough in this life,
yeah.
And they wanted to take vow of monk, they have gone back and become monks, and then
yeah.
then that's it. I don't think I know of anyone in the last 25 years who have come here.
Mm-hmm.
And have gone back
mm-hmm.
to become a monk or nun. Yeah, we had a very rich diamond merchant who came from India,
mm-hmm.
came here just to visit the Jain organizations, and on his return he was going to take the vow of, but he wasn't originally from here.
Mm-hmm.
And it is this person who actually impressed me so much about why your roots, why you cannot salvage yourself here, and why you need to come to India. Yeah? And he was very clear.
Mm-hmm.
He says, whatever you have in UK or in Europe,
mm-hmm.
yeah, you could have wealth, you could have this, you have a beautiful temple, you have everything, but this is your aunt. Your mother is still there. Okay? That is the difference. This will always remain your aunt. Your mother is there. And he says, without that, because your gurus are there.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very clear about what he was saying.
Yeah.
And this particular person, I think it was almost about 10, 12 years now, and he's doing tremendous work as having taken the vow of monkhood on environmental issues.
Mm-hmm.
He is one of our leaders in environmental change, to tell people, because our other principle is aparigraha, meaning limiting your acquisition.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And therefore, even when he was here, what he said was that each one of you should make a perimeter. Yeah? That I want 5 suits, 10 shirts, 3 pairs of shoes, 15 ties. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You make your own perimeter, however big you want to make. Okay? And then you live within that perimeter.
Yeah.
And therefore, if I say I need only 15 ties, yeah? And on Father's Day, my son brings a lovely tie for me as a 16th one. What do? I still accept that tie, but then I put one tie in the next black bag that comes at my house.
Okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And therefore, you are living. And then a time comes when I said, you know, I really don't need even 15 ties. How many ties do I wear?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So why 15? So I then now decrease my perimeter. Now, if aparigraha is followed by most people, I'm talking about these are material things.
Yeah.
It could be the same thing like the number of papers that you use, or you just waste and put it in. Yeah? If we can use the reverse for photocopying and computer work,
mm-hmm.
you know, the blank side, yeah, you can recycle the envelopes, reuse the envelopes. Yeah, but it is that, if an envelope from Jain Center goes to somebody, it must be a new one.
Mm-hmm.
If that is my thought, then I'm so wrong. Yeah, because the person who receives it is only interested in receiving that letter. How it comes is immaterial. But it is I want to show my that, you know, from Jain Center it must go in a white envelope. Yeah, if that is your thoughts, then you are chopping unnecessary trees, this, that, another.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy is now doing this work of environmental issues to tell people, what are your needs? Yeah, I mean, each one of us, if we open our wardrobes, we will find clothes in our wardrobes that we haven't worn for 3 years, 2 years.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, you are not going to ever wear those. Yeah? But do you have the heart to give it away?
Mm-hmm.
No? But my wife will demand a second wardrobe. Yeah? A third wardrobe.
Yeah.
Yeah? And now the rooms are also less, so a bigger house. And it's a vicious circle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Where someone can do with one room, now needs two. Now one room is not enough, so two. Larger house, and then we slog and work
to get everything
to get
else.
All that. And in that process is where we do our bad karmas.
Right.
Yeah? Because it is, we are chasing the needs.
Mm-hmm.
The needs are ever ending. It's not ending. We
mm-hmm.
just go after the needs. Needs, you want money. For money you work. Then you work and you can't get straight work, so you do all unnecessary type of things
mm-hmm.
to get that wealth. So it's a vicious circle. And he is bringing this very tremendous in a nice form to see that people replant trees, this, that, and other.
Yes.
So like this monk who impressed me, I mean, he just visited Leicester for a day. Yeah?
I had that fact.
And he was able to, and he wasn't a monk then.
Yeah.
Yeah, he wasn't a monk. And when he said all that, he wasn't a monk. He took the vow for monk when he went back. So, and now he's not only preaching, but he's practicing.
Yes.
So, you know, I would like to bow to this guy when I go and see him next time. Yeah. To see, you know, the tremendous, that little change that he has told. So my personal, my eventual journey is to India. I've already, as a 55-year-old, for the last 3-4 years, I've committed now myself to part-time work.
Okay,
so
you're cutting back.
Yeah, so I've started cutting back.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, my desire would be to go out there, because in the monsoon months, you know, the 4 monsoon months, our acharyas, our gurus, our monks don't travel. So say, if you have a bunch of monks in Bombay, then they'll stay there. If you have some in Pune, they'll stay there. Now, for example, if my favorite acharya is, say, in Bangalore for 4 months, yeah? I can decide from here that I will go and stay 4 months in Bangalore.
And he won't go anywhere.
He is not going to go anywhere. And I can have all the knowledge that I want. Next time I want to try someone else,
mm-hmm.
the next 4 monsoon, next year, I can go and...
So is that your plan for the future, to dedicate more time then?
Yes, more time, certainly.
And will your wife go with you? Or?
I don't know. We are all two different individuals.
Uh-huh.
As I said, my good karmas cannot benefit her.
Mm-hmm.
And her good karmas cannot benefit me.
Yes,
yeah?
It's an individual
and
process.
And then the same thing goes for the bad karma.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an individual thing.
Yeah.
If she says... that yes, this is probably what I should be doing, then she'll follow.
Mm-hmm.
Or who knows, before I think about it, she might do it first.
Yeah,
and I may follow. But, I mean, it's sort of, you could easily go 4 months there, stay there,
mm-hmm.
and then come back here, okay?
Yeah.
Because, as I said, I have my son who got married last year.
Mm-hmm.
He's here. So, eventually... you feel that your family is here, my brothers, my sisters are here. But that should not prevent me.
Yes.
Okay. From going to India and staying 4 months together there. If not 4 months, 2 months, 1 month.
Mm-hmm.
Something is better than nothing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that is how probably and I pray that, you know, I can do what I've set out to do. So far, whatever I've wanted to do, I have been able to do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see any reason why I can't do.
Right. Okay. And just finally then, to round up the interview, because this may be heard for generations to come, is there any final thought, a final message that you'd like to give to them personally?
To whom?
To the people who will be listening to this
okay.
interview in the future, for doing research or anything, but you can give your own personal message
okay.
to them.
My personal thought would be And I still believe very firmly that learning the mother tongue is an absolute necessity. Knowing your scriptures is an absolute necessity. And imbibing knowledge from your gurus is also a must. And I think if in this lifetime I can achieve all that, then I think my journey from this birth to the next one is probably going to be a better one.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.